You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahia he mari e, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toku ingoa.
Ko Sofia toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Kia ora and welcome to the show.
Yeah.
How are we today, Maya?
I am good, yeah. Good, you?
Good, I'm stoked. We launched an Instagram this week.
Yeah, scary.
Crazy. We're not like super like tech savvy people.
No, so, me especially.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
But it's exciting. I think we really thought it would be handy and helpful to have like visual indicators to like follow along to the interviews with.
For sure.
Yeah, so
for
hopefully, sure. Hopefully you guys really enjoy that.
Yeah, if you want to follow, it's just 95BFM Various Artists on Instagram. No dots or gaps or anything. But yeah, hit it up if you want to see,
yes.
I guess. But we've got a lovely show today. Maya, what have you got?
Yeah, I had a kōrero with Yelena Telechki. Soph, what have you got?
I had a kōrero with artist Graham Fletcher about his show Studio X, currently on at Gal Langsford Gallery.
He aha o whakara, we would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patahi mai, you can text us on 5395-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5
Also, after the show, kaua e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō hei pakihere roki roki maronga I te pai tokutoku o Irirangi Pōho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Let's get into the show.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
Studio X is an exhibition by Otipoti-based artist Graham Fletcher, currently showing at Gow Langsford Gallery. Fletcher is known for his representations of architecture, interiors, art and the domestic, bringing together contemporary and customary forms and intermixing Western high art and Indigenous traditions in his paintings. Inspired by the likes of Matisse's The Pink Studio, in this new body of work, Fletcher reflects on the intimate artist's studio as his locational subject, transferring the physical space of art making into art itself. Not depicting any one specific studio or space, the paintings extend on an interest in Fletcher's practice and the way in which he can visually communicate complex cultural discourses between Western and non-Western settings, often in a contemporary Pacific and New Zealand context, speaking to his own Samoan and European heritage. I had a kōrero with Graham Fletcher about Studio X and his process. Just to start our kōrero today, do you want to just start by introducing your practice, the mediums you work with, and the key ideas that propel it?
Okay. Sort of, well, it's not recent ideas. It's something I did during my doctoral studies, and it's been continuing on since then. And that was back in 2010, so I've been doing it for 15 years at least, looking at sort of intercultural spaces, the sort of mixing of cultures within a concept space, looking at tribal artifacts, modernist artworks, and mostly located within the 50s and 60s, so mid-century modern furnishings, which I quite enjoy looking at. Yeah, so it's based around mostly interior spaces, though I do sometimes do exteriors as well.
Yeah, as you say, your practice has long explored these representations of architecture, interiors, art and the domestic. In this exhibition, Studio X, you've taken to reflecting on the artist's studio as your locational subject, transforming the physical space of art making into art itself. What influenced this exploration of the subject or interests you about the artist's studio as a subject?
Well, it sort of came about in a strange way because I did have this title Studio X in mind, which was meaning Studio 10, as in Studio 10 paintings, Roman numeral X. But I was starting to look at Matisse's work again, and he's always been influential on my work, and I noticed, I did see his MoMA work, Red Studio, and a beautiful painting, a key red painting, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And then I started looking at some of his other studio works, Like the Pink Studio, and in particular there is one I quite enjoyed. I think it's called Interior with Aubergines.
Oh, yeah.
And that's an interesting work, that one, because there's a pattern that goes right through it. It's mostly blue, and it goes right through to the floor as well. And there's a flatness about it. And those sort of works stuck in my head and sort of inspired me to look at the studio instead of the lounge room, which is what I used to do. And going back to Studio X, there was other readings in it, I thought, as in X as a cross-cultural space, and also X as a the hidden or unknown, you know, X marks the spot. And I kind of find that studio spaces on the whole for artists are private spaces. So I thought, well, let's just pull that apart and I'll put all these studio spaces, they're made up spaces, they're composite spaces, collage together. I gather a lot of information, visual information, and I piece stuff together. So they're not real spaces. And there's a lot of modernist artworks in there as well of artists I quite enjoy looking at their work. So it was like a whole lot of different strands coming together towards this body of work. I'll keep going with the series a little bit longer, but I think it's got a finite life to it. There's only as many studios as you can make, I suppose. But I did really enjoy making this body of work.
You touched on it there, this idea that the artist's studio feels like quite an intimate insight into one's practice, where inspiration, material, and the artist kind of in a world intersect in a space, almost like a self-mirroring. Is there something to be said about your own relationship with your studio and your choice to depict the subject in this body of work?
Well, yeah, I guess it is self-reflexive, and I spend a lot of time in my studio, as do many artists. So I thought it was probably a good time to just kind of look into that now. And then I sort of wanted to make idealised spaces. So these are studios I will never be in myself. they're actually huge, massive windows. And I kind of think, well, these are spaces I would love. It's you know, like you project yourself in those sort of spaces. My studio is actually quite small, dark. The light's not too bad. But I would love a larger space. Of course, all artists say that. I think the problem is, for many of us, is storage, because I kind of store a lot of work in the space. So that's where all my space gets gobbled up with storage. Yeah. But in these spaces, I kind of kept with my old lounge room works. I almost like they're like advertising, you know, where they're not cluttered, they're very clean, like you're trying to sell something. And it reflects back to when I gather information. I go through a lot of old magazines around those sort of 50s and 60s period. And that sort of kept through the thread as well. So my studio space is quite messy. I imagine most artists have very messy spaces. And these spaces aren't cluttered in any way. If anything, they're like some sort of minimalist living in there or working in there.
Yeah.
Which is great if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, perhaps not so realistic. I wanted to come back to this kind of idea that does underlie your practice. It's long taken an interest in these intersecting representations of complex cultural issues between Western and non-Western settings, surveying the ways in which you can visually communicate these discourses, often in a contemporary Pacific and New Zealand context. How can these ideas be seen in this body of work currently showing at Gow Langsford? Can you speak to the iconography and the works a little?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to the idea of collections. I sort of see myself as a very amateur collector. Everything I have is basically, in terms of ethnographic objects, are souvenirs, souvenir works. If you could afford the real thing, I mean, you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars. So that's what sort of underpins a lot of it. I really enjoy looking at these objects, but basically, the only way I could get a close viewing of these objects are actually in museums. And I don't know the people who own, you know, these fantastic tribal objects at all. So I do just collect sort of lots of visual imagery of objects that I really enjoy. And that's the same with the mid-century modern furnishings as well. I have visual boxes, boxes of collections of imagery, sort of like a bank of imagery or treasury of imagery of things I like and I enjoy looking at. And that's how I piece together these spaces. And and when I think about it in terms of that mixing of cultures, that's why I look at the 50s and 60s. It felt like it was starting to introduce itself, the other, as opposed to Western culture. Those other cultures were introducing themselves into the lounge room, and I started seeing a lot of advertising in those magazines in the 50s, interior magazines mostly, and architectural magazines. Objects, tribal objects, sort of placed here and there within the lounge, and then I started noticing themes within domestic settings, such as the Japanese room or some other culture, American Indian room or something like that, and I feel like that's when it started really coming into society, I suppose, in general, throughout the West.
I guess to add to that, this body of work and being inspired by a lineage of 20th century artists exploring the studio as a subject and as a charged site of introspection references these portrayals of European art, but also unsettles and questions them with the presence of these tribal forms. What kind of keeps you interested in this intersection?
Well, I keep coming across these images of artists, and these are people I studied very early on, and sort of were like my heroes when you're doing your undergrad and you're looking at modernism in general. Picasso, Matisse, Braque, and I see images of them with looking at African objects and oceanic objects. I think it was the Surrealists that got more involved with the oceanic objects, and they had a different take on it. And Picasso and Matisse were more interested in the African object. I think André Breton described African objects as tilled earth or mother or the land. And then described oceanic objects as a dream, the sky, father, a different sort of at the other end, and which may align itself more with surrealist thinking. But it was those images that sort of keep me inspired. And there was that big show, Primitivism in the 20th Century, I think it was called, at MoMA. And I've got the catalogues, and now and then I just look through and just see what they called affinities between the cultures. And I find it quite fascinating. I mean, it looked kind of obvious when you kind of compare it, but I still find it fascinating when they do those sort of comparisons as to what from other cultures inspired this what inspired modernist thinking.
For sure. In terms of your making process, I'd love to know a little bit more as to what goes into that. Are you able to walk me through what goes into a work or a day in the studio?
Yeah, well, I start off like this. I'll go through this body of work. I start off trying to, trying to do something different, because I feel like you could easily fall into routine. So I used something which I didn't do before, was start using stencils to get a sort of a ground, a pattern underneath. I've almost painted it all out now. If you go down there, you'll still see like remnants of the stencil patterns underneath. And that was inspired by Matisse's interior with aubergines. And then there's a correction process, because I think when I look at that, and I was also looking at Patrick Caulfield, the English painter, I think he's a British painter. He does very flat works, blocks of colour. He does interiors as well. And I was thinking, wow, I really, find these inspirational. Maybe I'll sort of move myself into this direction. But I've jumped so far ahead that I had to auto-correct myself back to where I left off. And then I started going back to what I was doing, which is basically just layering up and you know, just putting down the blocks of colour, building it up and trying to get the space sort of feeling logical, or because they're all made from collage elements, so sometimes the scale's not right or the angles aren't right. You can look at it too much and you're never going to get it perfect. Sometimes I have to bring in my wife Holly to look at the work and say, oh, where are all the problems? Please tell me. So I put little stickies on things. Well, fix that, fix that, fix that. And yeah, so it's just that process. And I just rotate the paintings around and I'm just doing that constantly until I get to the point, which is my favourite bit, and it's probably the favourite bit for almost any painter, is to just put on the highlights at the end or deepen some of the shadows. And once I get to that point, I feel like that's enough. I can't do any more. And then I just leave it to dry, basically, and then send them up to Auckland.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're quite a perfectionist as a painter?
Well, that's a good question, because I probably say I'm not. I strive for it, but when I look back at the works, not that I could see anything major, big mistakes there. I just kind of think, oh, I wonder if I changed that a little bit, I could have fixed that, or have I made that shadow too long? Because, as I said, these are sort of concept spaces. A lot of it's just made up, so it's very difficult to get it spot on. So I've just got to go with some sort of holistic view and just trust my instincts with it. But yeah, maybe I do strive for perfection, because I do feel like I tighten up more and more. But I try and shake that off sometimes, because I feel like, no, you don't want to go down that path like a graphic designer or something, or even Patrick Caulfield. I want to have the artist's mark still visible in the painting.
For sure. For people who do go to see the show Studio X, how do you hope viewers entering the space engage with the works and the show?
I hope they kind of like this idea of looking into a space, maybe like another room. That's often how people have described the works when they, if they purchase one, they put it on the wall and it's almost like they think there's another room there.
Yeah.
Especially if they buy the big works.
It's like a window.
Or a sort of doorway into another space. I hope that's what they feel when they initially see the work. And then I hope they get in a bit closer and start seeing the detail, some of the mark making, some of the patterns that are sort of peeking through. I like that idea that they could see it from a distance and get enjoyment from it, but also maybe get some enjoyment from it as well closer.
That was artist Graham Fletcher speaking to me about Studio X, his current exhibition on at Gow Langsford City Gallery. The show is on until the 20th of September.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
All right, we'll be back after a short break. This is a new track from Mark William Lewis. This is Skeletons Coupling. You're on BFM.
A musical journey awaits you at Frida Margolis with a performance of The Amber Temple.
Creeping up and down your spine.
Witness music and dance colliding as singer-songwriter Julian Temple and contemporary dancer Amber Stevens draw the audience into a world of mystery with curious characters and strange events. The Amber Temple, Frida Margolis in Grey Lynn, Sunday, August 31st, and at Sawmill Cafe, Saturday, September 6th. Pre-sales available now at Under the Radar.
One of Aotearoa's most beloved artists, Bic Runga, is set to deliver an exceptional evening of music and song, Saturday, September 6th. Catch Bec performing songs from her bountiful catalogue, reinterpreted for orchestra and presented together with the majestic Auckland Philharmonia. Don't miss the inimitable Bec Runga, live for one night only with the Auckland Phil, Saturday, September 6th at the Artea Centre. Tickets available now from aucklandphil.nz.
A doco about Shane Carter, with archival footage from Flying Nun, plus interviews from other Kiwi music icons, and narrated by Carol Hirschfeld. Whoa!
We thought it ticked just about every box of things B-card holders would be into. So we have a double pass to the movie for you to win. Life in One Chord, a portrait of Shane Carter, directed by Margaret Gordon, in cinemas September 4.
West Coast, chopping.
Regan, wake up.
West Coast.
Honey,
onshore.
You're having those strange nightmares. Oh, no! No, it's not!
One out of ten on both coasts!
Oh, God! Father Damien, it's happening again!
Looking for tubular swells? It's the 95 BFM Surf Report. Is the West Coast gnarly? Is the East Coast bogus? Do people even still use these words? Find out every morning on Breakfast and every afternoon on Drive. The Totally Radical Surf Report, proudly brought to you by the dudes and dudettes at Probier.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Yelena Telechki is a Yugoslavian Sydney-based artist working amongst a practice of painting, drawing and sculpture to explore representation and its possibilities, looking towards the absurd to investigate the personal and the political. Her paintings display rich elements of narrative, the paintings themselves almost mimicking the likes of film stills or rather a play with their theatrical nature, cropped figures surrounded by murky grayscale atmospheres, luring viewers into a narrative that they don't quite know all the answers to. Within her current self-titled show at Stark White, Yelena Telechki showcases work from the past decade of her practice, bringing these works and their figures together in space and time through their overarching connected atmospheres, creating this enhanced feeling of her work as an extended play, experiencing each act through every encounter of a painting. I had a chat with Yelena about the show and overall practice. Could you start off by introducing yourself and your overall practice a little bit?
Yes, hi, thanks for having me, Maya. I'm an artist from Sydney, originally from Yugoslavia, and much of my work is, I think, informed in some way with that, I guess, Eastern European gloom. Apart from that, I'm really interested in power dynamics. So most of my work really circles or traces how we integrate ourselves in different groups in different societies. So I'm also interested in personal and shared narratives, in intimacy and violence, and of course, above all, in representation and how everything I'm interested in can be articulated by representation.
Beautiful. And your current show on at Stark White showcases work from the past decade of your practice, bringing these works and their figures together in space and time through their overarching connected atmospheres. This atmosphere that the paintings exist within has this real cinematic and theatrical quality to it. Could you speak a bit to this theatrical atmosphere that your paintings exist within? Where did it kind of arise from?
It's interesting. Often I hear that people experience them as theatrical. Well, I think I'm not trying to achieve that consciously, at least. So the way I think about these representations or what's represented or pictures is really coming from, again, trying to capture a scene, something that I experienced, something that I witnessed, or even something that I'm trying to I guess, communicate via this, I guess, slightly absurdist or absurd scenarios. And I think just at the end, when I finish, they appear to be theatrical or maybe sometimes cinematic. Of course, I love films and theatre. And maybe it's all about how do you use body language to communicate something, again, consciously and unconsciously. I think it's that sort of trying to distill something just to a body, to how we stand, what do we communicate with just with our bodies. So I often don't paint faces just because to me it feels maybe too specific. I'm kind of interested in more of this universal language of again, how do we communicate ourselves in different scenarios, in different social situations?
Yeah, that's funny that it's not, I don't know, that it's this kind of unconscious thing, because your works really mimic these kind of like film stills or like this these like pinnacle moments in plays or something.
I realized that I didn't mention, I often even pose if I have an idea of what I want to paint. So for instance, there's one painting, or actually maybe even few paintings in the exhibition in Starquide, where I actually posed in front of a camera because I wanted to see how a body would look like in that position, because it's something that I couldn't find anywhere. So it's sort of interesting. It's almost like it's a film in my head that I'm then trying to see in front of me via painting.
Yeah. And are you aware of this scene or this moment that is going to appear in the final work? You said you posed for some of these images, but is this aware of that composition of that kind of character before you're going to paint it?
I think to some extent. I think that I'm trying to understand it via painting. I don't paint after an image, in a sense. You know, there's some artists who really follow image directly, and everything is the same as it is in the image. So I don't do that. To me, it's something I imagined or something I've seen. Then I want to see it just to be sure. I mean, I'm very old school. I like what I paint to be anatomically correct. I know it's a sort of nothing, but it really matters to me to know that I got it right. And then I paint. But in doing all of that, I never know what's going to happen. And actually, that's the reason why I paint. It's because it's almost like I'm trying to understand things through the process of painting. And that's what makes painting interesting to me, or exciting. Often I make so many mistakes and I erase so many times what I started that painting becomes something completely different. But still, the starting point is something that I want to communicate. So yeah, to answer your question briefly, no, I don't actually. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, rarely they look exactly or they match what I had in mind. Yeah.
So these photos that you take are kind of the starting point in which the painting kind of journeys through and evolves to be its own kind of thing through that process of making.
I think it's more what I imagined. I would say that's a starting point. And what I imagine is, again, drawing from being really obsessively interested in, again, in these social theories, starting from something that's really personal and intimate, but then trying to understand it via connecting it to other situations that other people experience. So it's sort of, I think the show really is a great selection of these different obsessions of mine. It's often about me trying to understand how we as artists function in the world. How do we communicate? How do we this will sound really melodramatic, but often you really have to navigate so many things to be able to work and continue to work. and show your work outside of your studio.
Yeah.
And so those situations that when you are really, and I'm sure and I know that not only artists are in this situation, so everyone has experienced where you had to really be careful what you're saying and read the room. Mm. So those situations I'm really, really, really interested in. And I kind of start with, even when I think about something specific, for instance, I'm often interested in dyads, as in group, the smallest group that Georg Simmel researched and wrote about in his theories of social groups. So something even that gets me started is not the image itself, but it's sort of trying to understand something. And I don't want to try to make it sound really intellectual, because that's not, I mean, I think my work shows that it's really about the image, the representation rather, or the picture. But to get there, I have to be excited about something, and otherwise I don't paint. So that's a really, I think, a starting point, just being curious about something specific, and then trying to represent it via a picture.
Mm. Yeah, and you have already briefly talked about this, but I just wanted to go a bit more in depth. These figures that enter into your work, they're very mysterious and anonymous in nature, often presented through a very zoomed in lens of just their limbs and their feet with distorted, blurred faces. Could you speak a bit to these figures and this decision behind their anonymous presentation?
I can't remember when I started cropping everything. I think it starts from trying to avoid the character or representation or depiction of a particular character, which is what happens to me, to my mind, when I paint the whole figure with face. So somehow removing a face makes, to me at least, makes these paintings appear as more universal, yes, anonymous, but maybe easier to recognize oneself in them. So I think that would probably be the more direct answer. I mean, I understand that they would appear more mysterious if you can't see the head, if it's just the movement. But I think it's more about almost like a memory or a sensation of doing something. For instance, there's one painting in the work called Almost, titled Almost, I think it's from 2021.
Mm.
It's just a figure of a person in yellow jumpsuit that is trying to sit down, very kind of in insecure way, that where this person doesn't know if it's going to fall or not. And it's connected to a memory, my memory and memory of maybe other people that share it with me. When you are startled with something, when you're feeling really insecure, let's say in the meeting, and you just want to sit down and steady yourself. So it's that moment that I depict there, that I wanted to capture there. But if I painted myself, if I painted someone with a face, it just wouldn't be so maybe universal.
Mm.
So I think that for that reason, they just don't have faces or heads. It's almost like you can imagine yourself being in that body or in that situation easier if it's sort of more, if the figure or the position is more removed from that depiction of someone in particular.
Yeah, I really feel that. So the viewers can almost sink in and, yeah, relate to the painting in a different way compared to if it was a specific face.
Yeah, thanks. Well, that's what I always hope for, because ultimately painting for me is a way to communicate. It's all about communication and how you can do it in the most direct way, but not being obviously or literal. How can you do it so that people can connect or understand without being handheld, without being told what the work is about? Mm-hmm. So it's that beauty of allowing everyone to experience them the way they want, either as mysterious or either as something that's familiar or a situation that's familiar. So that's, again, something I really try to achieve in the work.
Beautiful. And switching over to more your material process, your paintings utilize such beautiful applications of paint and really thoughtful uses of color. Could you talk me through some of your material processes and your use of that color when it comes to creating a work?
I mean, this will again sound like naive or silly, but I love painting process, and it's really flexible. You can really change your mind so many times when you paint with oil the way I do. But I do work wet on wet or a la prima, so that means that I work quickly, and they have to happen in a day or a week the most, or nothing. If I don't resolve the work in that period, they're dead. They never work. So there's this fastness with which comes that simplicity, I guess. So you have to make your choices in a way that they're not too complicated, I guess, not too many colors. And I don't like color anyway. I think it's sort of confusing the narrative. So that's why I often use gray, and I love gray. And I also think it is connected to growing up in Eastern Bloc, where there was a lot of concrete, a lot of gray areas of grayness everywhere. And I also, I mean, it's funny how I go back to this Hungarian cartoon called Gustav, or Gustavus, I think, in Hungarian. So it's about this person. It's a really gloomy, kind of very funny, but very gloomy, very dark cartoon about this man who is always dressed completely in gray, and everything around him is gray. And I think I really, really informed my aesthetics just growing up with that character, and just trying to kind of communicate against something with gray, I guess, or monochrome, or sometimes I use yellows and pink as well, because I think it's such an ugly color to me. So it's really, I guess it's really about a sort of reduced palette and simplifying what I want to represent. Often I paint even the background, but I'm really happy with leaving more information about where this situation that I'm depicting is happening. But in doing all that, I think I'm not, although I love painting, I think I'm not too obsessed with technique. I'm interested in it and I always want to get better. But I think it comes and it develops by me trying to do something or represent something or tell a story, because everything has to happen so quickly. I think somehow I believe it sort of evolved via pursuing something a bit different. But I do have periods. I have periods when I really kind of take time just to learn and try new things and really kind of use that flexibility of oil painting and painting surfaces in general to see how far I can push it before it fails. I think that's sort of interesting to me.
Yeah, I think your paintings really capture this movement, and yeah, really links up to those kind of film stills and rapid motion in which you paint. And having a selection of works that were created over the span of a decade being shown in this one show, it really creates this enhanced experience of this kind of extended practice and extended play as you're walking through the exhibition, encountering each act through every encounter of a painting. How does it feel to bring all of these works together in the show? And in doing so, how does this add to the individual works, having them sit in a place of relation and amongst a kind of dialogue with each other?
Well, it's a great question, thank you, because I avoid doing that. So I have this, again, one more obsession with making series of work and seeing it as almost as an album or as a book, and all the works would sort of be connected with whatever I was interested in at that moment. So to see all these works that were selected, not by me, I mean, of course, I agreed with the great selection, but the selection was made on behalf of Stark White Gallery and assistance of my gallery in Australia, 1301 SW. So they made this really incredible selection. Ashley Gurr of Stark White, she selected the work. To me, it was really interesting, and I think like a great experience just to let someone choose from all these works what to put, what to kind of install in a space, and see a connection. It's, yeah, I think it's it's interesting. It's like an interesting experience to see them all together.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, they belong to different worlds. But I can see the, of course, I can see the connection. There's a similar sort of theme going through interest in failure, in vulnerability, in sort of communication between artists and patrons and artists as friends, as collaborators. So all of these things are sort of appearing and reappearing in selected works. Mm. And yeah, it's there's a kind of nice feeling of, I don't want to say letting go, it sounds a little bit melodramatic, but it's nice to trust someone and just let them respond to the work. And often what happens is that I'm satisfied with the choice also because it feels to me like my work is understood in the same way I wanted to communicate, what I wanted to kind of come across when you look at them all as this massive body of work. So it's great. It's interesting and it's I'm happy about it. Like I'm excited about it.
Yeah, because it's quite rare that all these paintings that you've created over a decade all come together. Normally they kind of go off into their own little places. So it's quite wonderful having them all together in a room and, maybe for you picking up on different things or, coming to them with a new sense or something since, like, all that time's passed and works that you never thought would be together, kind of, communicating.
It's really interesting. Some of the works, I mean, when I sent them to the gallery, I haven't seen in a while as well. So to see them kind of reemerging is really, it's like seeing an old friend.
Yeah, and lastly, what are your hopes for viewers as they enter into the space of your show and engage with the works?
This will sound like I'm arrogant or selfish. I don't want to hope. I mean, I feel once the work is installed and even once the work is outside of the studio, what happens with them, how people read, how they experience it, it's sort of not in my control, right? The only thing, if I can say, I hope the same way it was exciting to see every time, it's exciting to see when people really understand what I'm trying to communicate. So it would be, of course, wonderful if what I'm on about is recognizable in my work. But even if it is not, if people, I mean, often I have completely different sort of reading because I guess it's the work can be seen as fetishistic, which is, it's not about sex at all. But I understand that many people would see it as kinky or erotic or sexual. And I'm okay with that. I mean, of course, you expect that everyone will see what they want to see. So, I'm curious, but I don't wish to project any of my needs or expectations onto what people kind of will feel or see or understand when they're in the space.
I think
it's exciting not to have expectations. I think,
yeah, it's kind hopes. Of like a moment of release when they kind of enter the show and it's,
I think they have, they get their, a life of their own. So,
That was Yelena Telechki talking to me about her self-titled show, currently on at Start Quiet until the 20th of September.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
We've now got some Georgia Night for you, and then we'll be back with the Arts Guide.
Something to do.
95 BFM presents The Other's Way, Saturday, November 29, where you can see Sharon Van Etten and The Attachment Theory live. It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, Yelena Telechki's self-titled show is on at Stark White until the 20th of September.
Also, as mentioned on the show, Graham Fletcher's Studio X is on at Gower Langsford Gallery until the 20th of September.
And also, I'm very excited about this one, my wonderful friend Mark Cootie's Music on Hold opens tonight at Straw House from 5:30 to 7:30 and is on until the 20th of September.
We've also got Provenance 3 Gallery, a new group show opening tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. at Ivan Anthony Gallery, and it's on until the 27th of September.
Jennifer Mason's The Boundary of the Intelligible is on at Depot Art Space until the 13th of September.
Britt Graham's Wastelands is on at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki on the gallery's ground floor until 15th of February 2026.
Kathy Barry's We Went to the Edges of Time is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 6th of September.
Sue Connor, an exhibition by Jana Dombrowski and Bai, is on at Grace Gallery until the 13th of September.
The Tongue to Them is on at Artspace Aotearoa on Karangahape Road until the 4th of October.
Icon by Maggie Friedman and Among Ngākuru is on at Coastal Signs until the 13th of September. If you have something you want on the art guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us on Various Artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Graham Fletcher.
Yelena Telechki.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi, kia koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com.
Ka hoki mai mātou, Aotearoa Wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Nigel. My name is Sophia.
And I'm Maya.
And that was Various Artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.